Like, I know people who completely ignore investing, like, altogether. And I'll just be honest, many of them are academics, right? They may be listening to this right now. They're academics. They are so passionate about the work that they do. They kind of see wealth building and personal finance and investing and all these things as, like, a dirty deed. It's like this thing that you business people do, you soulless, money hungry people do. I've met people like this. I know people like this. And I think that funds like this, going back to what we were saying in the top of the conversation, actually help to serve as a bridge for them. It's like, all right, listen, I get it. I understand why you had this impression of building wealth, because a lot of these for-profit companies have really kind of turned a blind eye to some of the negative aspects of all of the things that they do. Capitalism as a whole sort of turns a blind eye on some of the negative impacts, at least in theory, or at least how some people think about it. But what this does, what these funds do, is they give you an option, a little bit more flexibility to say, all right, you know what? I can still invest because I kind of have to if I ever plan on retiring, but I want to do it in a way that I actually feel better about it.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. And today's episode is about ESG investing.
Ooh, starting off with some jargon.
ESG.
You down with ESG?
Oh.
Yeah, you know me.
Ooh, you are aging yourself. So I'm talking about ESG, not EST, as in Eastern Standard Time, or ESP, which is extra sensory perception. You don't know anything about X-Men or mutants? Okay. Well, ESG. Shout out to all my Marvel friends.
Oh, yeah, all the nerds are out there like, what?
Who are picking up what I'm putting down.
And not EXP. Shout out to all the real estate.
Shout out to EXP Realty. Yep. No, we are talking about ESG investing, which stands for, it is an acronym, obviously. It stands for environmental. Depending on the use case, the S stands for either sustainable or social, and the G stands for governance. It actually brings me back to the first time that I learned that term, which is 2017. We had just launched the blog. Mm-hmm. I remember the day when I saw the email pop up and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. We basically were contacted by a part of the team at The Atlantic. If you know, The Atlantic is a pretty large and renowned magazine and journalist organization. They had partnered with a financial company by the name of Nuveen, N-U-V-E-E-N, which I'm not going to lie, the first time I heard it, I thought I don't know why I was thinking like Nivea or whatever that like beauty product.
Yeah, it does sound like a beauty.
It sounds like a beauty
brand or like a medicine.
Yeah, but it's not. It's a, like, I think it's like a European-based company or something like that. But anyway, The Atlantic was partnering with Nuveen. They were trying to create some content. They had basically just launched an ESG portfolio. They knew that a lot of the work that we were doing wasn't just solely focused on personal finance and investing, that we kind of straddled the fence a little bit on some of the issues that we were trying to bring to the forefront. In our case, it was around diversity and the racial wealth gap. And it was like, you know what? These guys would be good for this opportunity. And so they flew us out to New York and we had a great time. We shot this video. We did like a little mini documentary. And so if you are familiar with our YouTube channel, you should head over there and check it out. Subscribe while you're there. But it's a pretty good documentary. It was our first experience. And I remember
it was our anniversary.
It was our anniversary. Bad habit of like traveling. But I think we were kind of like, you know, this is cool.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Free trip to New York for our anniversary felt like a good idea at the time. But to your point, back then, it was really the beginning stages of ESG investing, at least to me as an investor. It probably had existed well before that, but it didn't seem like something that was accessible to me.
Yeah.
And so the funds at that time were really heavy on the environmental and sustainability efforts, right? Companies that were committed to clean water and air pollution, those types of companies were in the funds, but not so heavy on more of the social kind of demographic driven companies.
Yeah.
But I think now's a great time to be talking about these things, especially with an audience like ours, who is a mix of new investors and more tenured investors. Yeah. So for the tenured investors, it kind of gives you an opportunity to ask what other outcomes you might want for your investments beyond just making you more money.
Yep.
And for the newbie investors who may have shied away from the stock market in the past because it didn't align to their values, or maybe they felt like it was just kind of this evil thing, you can now learn about this new type of investment. investment strategy. I can't promise that it's going to change your mind about the stock market being evil, but it may at least give you something to think about.
I think it will. Well, at least I hope it will. Because I can't imagine that there's anyone that's listening to this podcast that sees investing as evil. But in this case, I think there are likely people who have dual interests. So let's just start with like a high level definition. This is the Julian definition. Don't quote me on it. But like, I would define ESG investing as like moral or like value aligned investing, where a portfolio of funds are designed and allocated to like optimize performance and achieve some other subset of objectives, right?
Correct.
And I think that's important because it's not or. It's we're not sacrificing performance because we want to make sure that we're trying to accomplish these other likely non-financial objectives. We're actually trying to find a balance between the two. And there are actually some funds that are still slated or targeting to beat the market. And so obviously this is something that has been done, can be done. And so I think it's really interesting. And I think it's the type of investing for people who want to make sure that their investments lead to a positive change in society, right? So obviously the performance of the fund is something that can be measured super easily. It's basically, did it beat the market? Did it achieve its stated objective? Just like any other fund. But you're looking at other things as well. And so, for example, if you're interested in the environment, you mentioned that one because that's a big one. There may be a benchmark, or I'm thinking of like a LEED certification, L-E-E-D, or something like that, that a fund manager may be looking at in addition to the fund's performance. It could be something like minimizing their carbon footprint, meeting supplier requirements for sustainable products. It could be their commitment to be a part of some global international organization that focuses on climate change. Any number of these stated objectives are things that the fund manager is likely going to look at. And if the company fails to meet those objectives, they're going to remove them and either replace them with another company that can, you know, improve on those things. Let's say we're not talking about climate. Let's say you aren't particularly that concerned. You're entitled to not be concerned. You may have other interests such as LGBTQ plus progress in the country, racial issues, gender representation on executive boards, or heck, it's top of mind, a stance on women's rights, given the moment that we're in, guns rights, and so on and so on. All of those things can be captured and rolled into a fund. You either are supporting a company or an organization that is either committed to or actively making progress in those areas, or you're kind of not. And so these portfolios, these investment options are designed with all of those things in mind. And it kind of gives you the opportunity to achieve more than just financial objectives, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that people who bought or buy individual stocks have been doing a version of ESG fund creating within their portfolios for a long time. The people who buy individual stocks are typically picking them for their own list of reasons, the things that value that they value themselves.
Yeah.
Whether they're valid or not, whether it works or not, different story, but like it's the same idea. This is now a new value set for fund managers to pick from instead of just financial metrics that comprise, you know, a bunch of companies in one bundle that you can buy into. But the reason we're talking about this is because Vanguard just released their sixth ESG fund, and it's called the Positive Impact Fund. And I think it perfectly sums up what an ESG is all about.
Yeah.
In their own words, they describe the fund as one that seeks to outperform its benchmark in the long term and support measurable positive change in the world. So when you think about all the things that are happening right now, and there's a lot of them, I can see why this might be intriguing to an everyday investor, because I think a lot of people feel guilty about their privilege or guilty for having so much while knowing that other people just don't. They have very little.
I know, I do.
Yeah. And so this just allows them to achieve both objectives and hopefully feel a little better about what they're doing.
Yeah. And even, you know, as you're saying feel, obviously this is a podcast. You can't see that. She's using air quotes, like feel.
Yeah. You know? But you can hear it in my voice.
It's one of those things that's actually really difficult to measure. You might feel a certain way about it today. And then if it fails to meet your objectives, you're going to feel a little differently.
You lose money on it, you might feel a little different.
It could be the other way around. So I don't know. But our job is to sort of present it to you guys because we think it's interesting. And I would be willing to bet that there are a lot of people who have never heard of ESG funds. But I want to dig a little deeper into Vanguard's latest fund, the one that you just mentioned, the Positive Impact Fund. So there are four focus areas that Vanguard has for that particular fund. And I'm going to pull this information straight from the website. So the first one is social inclusion and education. And basically, the fund is comprised of companies that, one, contribute to a more inclusive society through business practices, products or services, or two, are improving the quality of accessibility of education. That's cool. The second objective is environment and resource needs. So companies that are committed to improving resource efficiency and reducing the environmental impact of society's economic activities.
You definitely are pulling this from the... from the website, because I'm like, what is that?
Because
mean?
I don't want to miss. I don't want to miss.
Or,
you know what I mean?
It's important to read it, like as they wrote it.
This is what they're saying.
This is how they position these funds.
Yeah. The third, because it's thick.
It's thick with jargon.
Thick.
Okay. Environmental impact of society's economic activities.
Yeah, maybe ESG buzzwords. If you're a tree hugger, like this is like pillow talk. Okay. Healthcare. This is companies that are actively improving quality of life in developed and developing countries. And then the fourth one, which I thought was a really interesting word choice, was base of the pyramid. This is their fourth focus area. They're calling it base of the pyramid. And this is basically companies that are addressing the basic and aspirational needs of the world's poorest populations.
Oh, wow.
I'm just going to go ahead and translate that. That's exactly what you were describing before. That's like wealth guilt. Mm. That's privilege guilt. That's like, all right, we have so much, but there are people who are at the base. Quite honestly, the working class, the working poor, the people who are doing all of the work that make all of these companies profitable, et cetera. So this is like sort of feel guilty about capitalism, invest in these kinds of things. Okay, so let's dig a little bit deeper. What types of companies are we talking about? Again, I'm pulling straight from their website. And this is pretty typical whenever you're looking into the details of a particular fund. They want to show you what the top holdings are. When I'm looking at the top 10 holdings, I'm not going to talk about the percentages or anything like that, but I think the first one is like 8%. It's companies like Moderna, right? If you've been paying attention, obviously you know that Moderna is a biochemical company that produced at least one of the COVID vaccines. The second company that's in the fund, Tesla, which I can imagine given all of the things Elon Musk is in the news for, maybe they'll reevaluate this or not. Yeah. I don't know. But Tesla is still there as one of the companies in this particular fund. Obviously, they're an auto and tech company. The third is one I'd never heard of. Actually, the third and fourth I'd never heard of. It's ASML. And the second one is TSMC. They're kind of similar companies, but they produce semiconductors and microchips. The fifth is Mercado Libre, which is, I believe, an Argentinian company. I like to think of them as like Shopify or eBay. And then the last one is Illumina, or the sixth one, I should say, is Illumina, which is another biotech company, but they focus on genetics. So if you think about the companies that are actively working to fight against cancer screening and do all of that high-tech stuff, we can go on and on and on, but I think it just kind of gives you a general idea. So if you're thinking about like what is comprised of this fund, it's like companies like this, companies that are committed to clean energy, companies that are helping to fight against, you know, deadly diseases and so on and so on. So it's a really, really interesting mix. It's, I think, a really great way of thinking about investing. And obviously, you can also make some money while doing it.
Yeah. So you might be thinking, great, what's the catch? And
there's no catch.
As you might expect, there is a catch. And the catch in this case is that they're a bit more expensive than your typical mutual fund, which makes sense. We often talk about the benefits of investing in cheap funds and how that's measured by looking at the fund's expense ratio. But anytime you start adding in these layers of things that need to be looked at, examine, analyze, it increases the cost of what it takes to maintain that fund. Now, I will say that the expense ratios that we're about to share have gone down over the years. When these funds were first launched, they were way closer to the 1%, the higher expense ratios that we're used to on like high growth funds that also promise big rewards, big gains. And since then, they've come down a little bit. But let's do an example real quick. So for Vanguard, their flagship fund, VTSAX.
The workhorse, baby.
Is the workhorse. And it's the total stock market index fund. And it has an expense ratio of 0.04. So if you were to invest $10,000 into the fund's Admiral shares, which is what you're automatically converted to after your portfolio meets a certain balance, 1 year, it would cost you $4.
$4.
$4 for your $10,000 investment.
I can three, find it.
Yeah. 3 years would cost you $13. 5 years would cost you $23. And holding the fund for 10 years would cost you a whopping $51. Which I literally spent more than that on Uber Eats sushi the other night.
Sushi will get you, man.
Sushi will get you, right? Like, that's another episode. Now, conversely, the fund, Vanguard's Positive Impact Fund, has an expense ratio of 0.59%, which is about 15 times more expensive. So using that same math, to hold it for 1 year would be $59, which is more than holding the Vanguard fund for 10 years.
Yep.
So 1 year would cost you $59, 3 years would cost you $191, 5 years would cost you $339, and 10 years would cost you $752, yep. Right? So even though the number is still small, 0.59%, it's still 15 times more than the alternative.
The literal cheapest available option, to be fair.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you know, if you just look at it and think about it, I think I did the math and it's like, if you were to hold, you know, or just like another way of looking at it, it's like over a decade, holding that fund would cost you about $5 a day, which I don't want to sound like an infomercial, but <Yeah. laughs> that's literally what it sounds like. It's like, yeah, for just $5 a day, you can actually help solve a lot of the world's problems, right? Compared to holding VTSAX, it's like, well, that's a penny a day, right?
Yeah.
And you're not necessarily solving any of the world's problems through your investments.
But you are invested in the same companies.
Several of the same companies.
They're just also mold in there with like arms dealers and maybe some other stuff you don't agree with, but yeah, like Tesla is in VTSAX.
Correct.
Like these companies, the semiconductor biotech, they're also in there. They're just not, you know, vetted for all of the positive qualities and virtues.
Yep. So the question you then have to ask yourself is, assuming that money was reinvested, right? So there's a big difference between that penny a day and that $5 a day. Assuming that money was reinvested, how much more of a ending balance might you have if that money were compounded over a certain period of time? And, you know, it actually makes me think of our book tour. I'll just be honest, right? Because we're doing a book tour right now. We're very fortunate that we've got at least a summer book tour. We started in Atlanta. We had Philadelphia and D.C. We're then going to Dallas, Raleigh, and then ending it in Richmond, Virginia. The entire tour is sponsored by Capital Group. We've had a long and great relationship with them. They are sponsoring the entire tour. We've committed to not only just go to the tour, meet people, sign, and do all those things, but we've also committed to actually kind of doing our part to kind of leave the city in a better condition than it was when we left it. And so one of the things that we're passionate about is fighting food insecurity. And so here in Atlanta, we made a $500 donation to an organization that does their part to do that. We did the same thing in DC and in Philadelphia. We'll continue to do that throughout the tour. I would be lying if I didn't say, I wonder what else we could do with that money. We could be investing that money right now. Like the mm-hmm. stock market is on sale. We could be giving that money to our son. We could be using that money to support our children. We could take another vacation. You know what I mean? Like all of those things you could argue would have some type of positive impact.
Right.
But we've actually decided to do that. And so I think it's kind of similar here where you find yourself in a situation where it's like, all right, this is an available option to me, but it's really no different from any other time where you would have had that option where you can decide whether or not you want to do something that may have a positive impact in one area or decide just to avoid it altogether. It can be kind of awkward, but you know, this is the world that we live in.
Yeah, it's a very American thing to make sure that everything has multiple uses. Like in most places, investing has a very specific purpose, and it's to fund your life when you're not able to work anymore, or to just supplement your job or whatever, your income whenever it's no longer there. And here we're trying to make it like it is also going to be the governing body and our means for driving social and climate change. And it's like, it's kind of like trying to make a rake do what a fork does. Like it's very difficult. Sure, you can make it work, but it comes with its own set of nuances.
Yeah, if you're a giant.
Yeah. If you just use one prong
as forks.
Yeah. So we've spoken about Vanguard's Positive Impact Fund and noted that it's the sixth ESG fund that they have, but there are actually several others that we want to talk about, and one that I think is worthy of discussion, and that's from Betterment. So Betterment is the first and largest robo-advisor. And whenever I throw out jargon, I always feel the need to explain.
I was just about to say, you better go ahead and explain what that is.
We actually did an episode on robo-advisors. It's episode 36 that we recorded last December. A lot has changed since then. But for those who are unfamiliar with the term, robo-advisors are designed to be less expensive than traditional financial advisors. The whole idea that kind of underpins their existence is that artificial intelligence and sophisticated data modeling is far more fast, reliable, consistent than just being a regular old human being.
Well, not to mention a lot of these regular old human beings are actually relying on sophisticated modeling
right.
and algorithms.
Yeah, it cuts out the middleman.
Sharpen their recommendations anyway. So
yeah.
To your point, what it's really about is saying, all right, well, if all you're going to do is read this recommendation,
yeah.
why don't we get
why don't
you
we
out
put
of the
it
picture
in front of the customer.
And
yeah.
help save people money and lure them in. So
yeah.
welcome to the future.
Yeah. So Betterment has ESG funds as well as what they call their socially responsible investing portfolios with focus areas on three areas, climate, social, and then what they're calling broad, which sounds very similar to Vanguard's base of the pyramid
yes.
fund. So you guys know a lot of the work that we do sits at the intersection of race and money. So we're particularly fond of their social impact fund. And here's the way that they think about their approach. So the Broad Impact Fund is, like we said, exactly what it sounds like. It's a set of funds that cover a broad range of issues. What they do is then build on that and reallocate some of the funds to achieve more specific objectives, which is where the climate and the social funds come in. So you want to think of the broad fund as the base and the social and climate impact funds as the add-ons that provide some focus. And since we're interested in the social fund, let's talk a little bit about how that sausage is made. So first, there are impact shares, NAACP, Minority Empowerment ETF.
That's a mouthful.
It is. It's also called the NACP. And what it does is allocate money towards companies that rank highly on their diversity policies and how they engage with communities of color. It's the only fund of its kind.
Yep.
So if you're interested in this, you got to go through Betterment and the NACP. The second one is that they add the State Street Global Advisors Gender Diversity Index ETF, which is also called SHE, S-H-E. And what SHE does is selects companies who lead their peers in terms of women in senior leadership positions. So according to Betterment, by investing in NACP, investors are putting more of their money in companies with a proven track record of minority empowerment and diversity policies. And by investing in SHE, investors are placing more of their money in companies that have demonstrated more of a commitment to gender diversity within senior leadership than any other firms in their sector. So if you're passionate about these two issues, this is a way to reward the companies who are checking the box on different things with your investments.
Yeah, I really like this stuff. I'm not going to lie. Like, I think this is really, really cool for a long list of reasons, but I'll only give two. So like just off the top of my head, I know people who completely ignore investing like altogether. And I'll just be honest, many of them are academics. You're right. They may be listening to this right now. They're academics. They are so passionate about the work that they do. They kind of see wealth building and personal finance and investing and all these things as like a dirty deed. It's like this thing that you business people do, you soulless, money hungry people do. I've met people like this. I know people like this. And I think that funds like this, going back to what we were saying in the top of the conversation, actually help to serve as a bridge for them. It's like, all right, listen, I get it. I understand why you had this impression of building wealth, because a lot of these for-profit companies have really kind of turned a blind eye to some of the negative aspects of all of the things that they do. Capitalism as a whole sort of turns a blind eye on some of the negative impacts, at least in theory, or at least how some people think about it. But what this does, what these funds do, is they give you an option, a little bit more flexibility to say, all right, you know what, I can still invest because I kind of have to if I ever plan on retiring, but I want to do it in a way that I actually feel better about. And I know for a fact that I'm investing in something that is aligned with my values. And I think the second one, and I'm totally projecting here, but the second reason why I really like this is because I do think about like the types of questions that our son and his generation are going to ask us. They're probably going to be very similar to the kinds of questions that we asked or asked of our parents and their generations. Like, bro, where were you when these things were happening? What were you doing? Like, how could you work for that company? And you don't know. In retrospect, it's like, I didn't know
that
they were doing those things. Yeah. I mean, you're right. I'm not going to lie to you. I did hear, but I didn't really ever feel like our lives or our livelihood were at risk. And so this at least gives you some ground to stand on. It was like, no, son, we actually made a point to say that we were not going to fund or invest or disproportionately invest in companies that we knew were misaligned with some of the things that we thought were important. And so, yeah. I don't know. I just think that's important.
That's a really good point. There has been quite a bit of research that shows that Gen Z is far more of a conscious consumer than its generational predecessors.
Correct.
And so this kind of stuff does matter to them. And so I hadn't thought about the fact that they may have created this financial product without me in mind. Correct. So if I'm feeling any resistance around whether it makes sense or not, it's probably because I'm not the core target demographic. And by the time those kids are old enough to invest their own money, we could be in a world where the expense ratio is right on par, maybe not with Vanguard's cheapest option, but with a more affordable option.
I think it's safe to say that available investment options have always been a reflection of values.
Yeah.
I just think right now, at this point, because
there's a
bit of a shift where people are sort of looking at the big picture. They're looking at how the sausage is made. We're also able to now see the impact of some of those decisions.
Yeah, true.
And as a result, start to look at alternatives. So
yeah.
Those are some of the things that I think about. And yeah, we'll see. I think a lot of people probably think about that too.
Yeah. Okay. One more quick point about Betterment. I mentioned as a general rule that robo-advisors are less expensive than traditional advisors, and Betterment is no different. Betterment charges a flat 0.25% annual fee, or about $2.50 for every $1,000 invested. Mm-hmm. Over time, that transitions to a 0.4% annual fee with a minimum balance of $100,000, which is about $400 for every $100,000. So it is a lot more expensive than Vanguard off the top.
Relative to Vanguard,
which is like, you know, comparing things to like Aldi. Like, yes.
Right, you're right.
It is more expensive than Aldi, but you get a shopping cart that you don't have to pay a quarter for.
Right.
So yeah. And they also give a discount if you reach a $2 million balance in your portfolio.
Oh, that's nice.
So, you know, aim for that.
You can save a couple $100 if you're willing to park a couple mil with my company. Yeah, I think I'll add one point to that is that relative to Vanguard, right? It's considered pricier. I don't know that I would call it expensive. But I think relative to what most people are doing, because most people are not invested with robo-advisors at all. Most people are actually looking or that are invested are likely invested through financial advisors, traditional financial advisors. And we've already done the math on those, mm-hmm. which is to say that most people are actually, I think the average expense ratio that people are paying is around 1%, right? So significantly expensive than all of these options. And most people don't even know it.
Correct.
Because they don't listen to the Rich and Regular podcast.
Boom.
Anyway, so in general, I am a fan of both, right? We literally invest with both. We have our solo 401k with Vanguard. We have a brokerage account with Betterment. They're not nearly the same, but like we do think it's important to have those experiences. We have several investment accounts. One of them just happens to be with Vanguard. And our plan really is to just fund that Betterment account a bit more aggressively over the next couple of years. I could see a world where we actually explore some ESG funds. Mm-hmm. It may not be the Betterment fund. It may be the Vanguard fund. I don't know. But I could definitely see a world where we do that. What I will also say is that in a way, we, you know, sort of shifting gears from investing for a second, when we think about our expenses, we are certainly mindful of our values, right?
Oh,
we do a lot of that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know even within our work with Money on the Table season two, we really made it a point to support Black-owned businesses and work with Black creatives. But even in my personal life, as I think about hair care, jewelry, clothing, all of the things that I consume on a regular basis, I do go out of my way to try to find minority-owned businesses, family-owned businesses, small businesses, just something that isn't so fast fashion and big, you know, faceless company.
Yeah.
Now, there are times, I will say, since we're being honest with each other, since this is very vulnerable, there are times where it just doesn't make sense, either because the shipping doesn't meet my needs or the markup, because it is so handcrafted and cared for, is out of my price range.
Or we don't have the time to search.
Or I don't have the time to search, or it's located in an area of town that like I just don't go on regularly. So there are times where it just doesn't fit my lifestyle at the moment, but I still try. I'm still building the habit to look outside of big companies first.
Yeah, even in our book tour now, like we're hiring people along the way. There are things that we need, but we just had a really great experience with this company, Snapper, for photography services. And I was like, that was really easy. Yeah. So I might do that again because it's a lot quicker. So, all right. So we've spent a lot of time talking about what ESG is. We've gone through a couple of examples. I think it's safe to say, if you want to call it something, it's like feel good investing, but it's not all good. Right. We've spoken a little bit about the costs and how much more expensive they can be, but there are some other critiques of ESG investing, and I'll just be brief here. I'm paraphrasing an article from the Financial Times where they were talking about an article from one of the most respected financial industry leaders. His name is Tariq Fancy, and he is
a great name.
No, Tariq Fancy. This is a rap name. But he's no fan of ESG. He actually thinks it's all smoke. And so I just wanted to comb through some of these, some of his top three critiques, according to this article. The first one was that all this really does is it raises the cost of capital for these funds and these companies. Basically, he's arguing that all of this work to be better is just that, it's work, but it doesn't actually prevent or limit any of the bad things that are happening.
True.
And you could argue, I'm pretty sure that, yeah.
It's a cleanup investment.
It is, right? It's like, well, have we seen, like if we're going to be critical of, let's say, corporate America, for example, then we should likely also be critical of these funds to say, well, you guys said that you were committed to diversity. Like, what role do you play, or what accountability do you have for the lack of progress that we've seen in these respective areas? Fair critique. Second one he says is, if these funds actually did provide higher returns, which many companies and fund managers proclaim they do, then everyone would do it. And this would be a non-issue. Mm. It's like, well, if it were just that easy and you did it, then just like everything else, we could just copy it and do it.
And I could see that. I could see that these funds are probably taking a snapshot, a very
ambitious,
strategic snapshot of when things were performing better than a standard fund.
Which is what most of them do.
Yeah.
They're ambitious, right?
Yeah,
and
they're new.
They're ambitious.
You gotta be.
This is the target.
Scrappy.
Correct.
And ambitious when you're the new kid on the block.
Yes. The third critique is that, and this is the one that I actually think is most intriguing, is that he argues against the idea that the investment horizon will mirror the time horizon for the issue that we're trying to solve, or the issue that they're trying to solve, which
I think is
actually a really, really good point. Because just thinking of a simple example here, going back to diversity in boardrooms, if it only takes us 10 years to achieve a stated financial objective, right? Like you've got this goal, but it's going to take you 20 years to achieve this social objective. It's like, well, what are we doing for the next 10 years, right? Like, how are we utilizing or passing on those savings? And in most cases, I think what he's saying is like, there's this built-in inefficiency, right? Mm-hmm. And you could argue almost an incentive to slow down so that you meet the fund's target, right? So, you know, I think these are actually really fair critiques. I don't expect any of our listeners to really dive into that. Again, I think you just want to make sure that it's available to you, right? It's something that you can think of.
Yeah.
And I think especially for people who have found themselves on the outside looking in, I think it's important to know that these types of funds and options are available. And at least you know that you tried and you did your part.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, there are companies that have done real harm to people. And so like these funds also give those people a way to invest without funding their...
Or to divest.
That's a better way of putting it. To divest from the companies that have harmed their family through any number of reasons, either making where they live unaffordable or, you know, not paying a living wage or not letting somebody off right before health insurance kicked in. Like, there's a lot of reasons why people may do this.
And I think that's where it started, where people really just wanted to say, listen, I'm just going to use this as an example and just, you know, trigger warning here, right? If you are, or someone you know or love has been a victim of gun violence, you don't want to know that you're also an investor in a gun manufacturer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, or a company that gives significant political capital to gun lobbyists or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Correct. So it's those kinds of things where for sure you can
Absolutely.
Wipe your moral slate clean by saying, I'm completely divested from these things. I'm disconnected. I'm against those things.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah. For someone who hasn't experienced extreme harm directly from a lot of the companies that we're talking about, this feels very chicken or the egg for me. I think that his points, Mr. Tariq Fancy's points, are the reasons why I've shied away from making these types of investments a PPP, a primary player in my portfolio. I just made that up.
I was about to say, how did we get into PPP?
Okay. I forgot that's an acronym that people already
use. That already exists.
Well, primary player in my portfolio could be something that audience, y'all tell me. But like, here's my thing. I think it's absolutely important to support the companies who are leading the way and making significant progress in areas like climate or medicine, where the metrics are far more cut and dry. Things like, did you stop a malaria outbreak from happening? Did you create something that removes oil and garbage from the ocean? Those things are measurable and they're tacit. You can touch them, you can see it.
Yeah.
But when it comes back to social impact, which is getting more women in leadership positions, making sure that minority-owned businesses have similar access to capital, it's a lot more gray. And I think there are enough history books about how social movements and change actually happen. And it just seems like the better place for me to invest my dollars is hyper-locally, like investing in the grassroots organizations in every city and town that literally have their boots on the ground and are making things happen and are changing the fabrics of their towns. So this feels like it's going into my final thoughts.
I was just about to say,
we should just
I agree with that. Was that your final thought?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'll probably just like ruminate on like who I possibly think that these ESGs are like very specifically for. You know, if you're a big picture thinker, if you're a person who likes to see impact at scale, this is one way to do it. And it's very clean. It's not nearly as messy as working with like local nonprofits and grassroots organizations who are split between doing the work and doing the administrative part of the work. Like what you pay for with your 0.4% or 0.8%, whatever your expense ratio is, that somebody is actually doing the due diligence of looking at all of these companies and ensuring that they're in line with your values. But if your goal is just to use your money to make the world better, ESGs are just one option.
Correct.
You still have all of the other options available to you. And so I'm glad we could add to your list of things that you could possibly do.
Yeah, I think obviously the tried and true way of just trying to make as much money as possible so that you can then decide, pick and choose which organizations you want to fund. Like there are other arguably simpler, you know, ways to accomplish this. I will say, and this is my final thought, is no one's telling you to sell your entire investment portfolio or have 100% of your funds invested in ESG funds. I think you could look at it the same way that we look at our emergency fund, which we made a deliberate choice to park in a Black-owned bank. Mm-hmm. Why? Because we know that those banks are more likely to fund Black-owned businesses and help support some of the other priorities and objectives that are important to us with respect to building wealth in our community. So this is the same thing with us. You could say, or same thing with investing. You could decide that, you know what, next year I'm going to ensure that 5% of my income or 10% of my income and so on is invested in ESG funds with this company or that company, et cetera. So the point is you have options, but the choice is still yours.
Yeah. Or you could put your kids' funds in ESG funds.
We talked
about kids' investment options last week or the week before. So go back and listen to that episode if you are feeling froggy. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you like what you heard and you want to make a social impact in my life on this podcast, you don't have to open an ESG fund at all. All you got to do is take a few minutes to leave us a 5-star rating and review. Shout out to the lovely listener who reminded me that I have not been as creative on the last two pleas, even though she has already written a review. I promise to step my game up and we will see y'all next week. Bye.